All right, Anita. Uh-oh. All right, Anita, I'm gonna have to, I've got so many hands raised all of a sudden. I've got four hands raised. I don't know which one. I'm gonna, let me start over here. I'm gonna delete all these and then just Anita, raise your hand. Okay, so Anita, go ahead and raise your hand again, press star six. I think. All right. All right. I'm going to try this. Just a second, you guys. I don't know why so many hands are going up here. Okay, go ahead now, Anita, try to raise your hand again, star six. I apologize for the delay. And then if Anita, let's see who's next. Christine, also get ready. Don't press star six yet, but get ready. Anita, are you there? Okay. So, Anita, when you're ready, go ahead and press star six. Christine, press star six if you're there. Hello, hello. Okay, try one more time. Christine, star six. There we are. All right. Okay. Who is this I'm talking to?
This is Anita.
Hi, Anita. Okay, so Christine,
hi.
You're in on next. Hi, Anita. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you, Jen?
Good, good. Thank you for your two. We've got two coaching questions we're going to do briefly. They're both excellent ones. And the first one is about your mantra. Tell me what you would like to get out of this conversation in terms of your mantra.
I'm just wondering if I can come up with something that's a little bit more inspirational. I mean, I like the mantra, that just for the joy of it, and I actually am quite pleased with the we've got this, but I'm just kind of looking for something that's maybe a little bit that makes me just feel it a little bit more in my heart, so to speak.
Good, good. So would you describe briefly kind of what your experience with was with your original mantra, just for the joy of it?
When we first came up with that, there was a definite feeling of that's it, you know, I could actually feel it in my body, like in my chest. And that was like, you know, that is the mantra. And it served me well. And I, like I said, you know, just maybe changing it up a little bit.
So when it served you well, what did it do for you?
It took the pressure off. A lot, so much, I like putting a lot of pressure on myself, an outcome based, expectation of competing as opposed to the process. And
yeah, so it really helps you focus on your own riding.
Yeah, when it's just like, you know, we're not going to the Olympics here. We're doing this for fun. And I would get so caught up in the outcome. And so just for the joy of it made me realize, or just made me focus on, it's the process that's what is important and not necessarily the outcome.
Great. And it helped you, so it helped you shift from like feeling, would you say, sort of nervous and anxious to feeling what?
I'm not, but what's the word that I would use here? To feeling just, I guess accomplished might be a good word.
Okay. So just for the joy of it, helped you feel accomplished. And I mean, in the moment when you were using it, did it help you? Was it more inspiring for you? Did it help you feel more connected to your horse?
It helped me feel more just relaxed and more connected
Okay,
to the horse,
good.
yes, because it was definitely, you know, it's about me and him. It's not about like the necessarily the outcome of how it all turns out. It's about how we did perform together.
Okay, so now you've got a new goal. What's the goal that you're working on right now with him?
So my goal for this year is to compete at fourth level.
Okay.
And, you know, we're in the very beginning stages of that, and there's lots of room for improvement. And so the goal is to just, is to do it and then to get progressively better through as the year goes.
So what is, how would you like to experience, so is the fear cycle getting in your way at all when you're riding or when you're training or when you're competing?
No. Not
Okay.
when I compete dressage at all. There's some anxiety that comes up when I'm doing 3-day,
Yeah.
but that's way better than what it was. But when it comes to just riding dressage, there's no fear, there's no anxiety.
Okay, so your mantra is not about like shifting from being nervous to something else. It is about really up-leveling your performance. Is that right?
Yes, I think that's very accurate. Yes.
Okay, so how would you like describe for me, do you have a show coming up or a clinic or anything coming up?
There's a 3-day coming up, but not until April.
Okay, so in
So
April,
I
when
have
you
some
go to do
time.
your dressage test, at that event, what, how do you want to feel?
Confident.
Okay, good. What else? Now describe for me that ride. How does it feel? What, or what does it look like? Or kind of give me some descriptive words for what's important to you about that ride.
It flows really smoothly. It's seamless. It's harmonious. It looks effortless.
Great. So, what are there any, when you think about phrases, so you said what you've been using is we've got this, right? But it doesn't feel like it has quite enough punch for you. What about that does work for you?
There's a, when I say that, especially, you know, as it relates to jumping, it gives me a sense of like it grounds me.
Good. So is there, is that, and so when you're jumping, do you want to have, right now, do you want to have a mantra for jumping or do you want to have a mantra for dressage?
I want to have a mantra for both.
Okay. So for
if
the
possible.
jumping, is that, is if you're riding, if you're going into the ring or you're headed out onto the cross country course, we've got this. Does that put you in the mental and emotional state you want to be in to excel in that moment, to really be
I
present
would
and
say
ride?
yes. I
Okay.
would say yes. I think that the we've got this for the jumping is good. So I guess I want
Okay.
to upgrade my dressage mantra.
Okay, good. And so the important thing it sounds like the dressage is that it's fluid, that it flows, that there's harmony, that it's like about partnership. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
So what do you want to be able to say to your horse?
Um,
Or
so it
what do you
comes
want
to
his
mind.
experience of you to be? What do you want him to experience?
I want him to experience that my expectation that he is going to meet my he already meets my expectations and beyond, you know? So it's this, this sense of like, I know he's given me everything he's got, and I want him to know that. And just this sense of, you know, that I guess I have high expectations of him because I just feel like he wants to give that to me.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
So you owe me nothing. Let's do this. You owe me nothing. He owes you nothing, right? This is all what he gives generously, and it's all about fun for the two of you.
Yes, that's very accurate. Yeah, you owe me nothing is a very, yes.
So is it, when you're thinking of the ride, do you want it to feel like a dance? Do you want it to feel playful? Do you want it to feel like what would be a descriptive word for, you know, if you owe me nothing, let's dance. You owe me nothing. Let's do this. You owe me nothing. We've got this.
The word exuberant comes to mind.
I like that. So sometimes a mantra is just a word, exuberant. Like if you're riding along and you think to yourself, exuberance, what is that going to do to your body?
So just when I first came up with that word a couple seconds ago, there was a sense of lightness associated with it.
Yeah. Okay. Lightness. Lightness, exuberance. So my homework assignment for you is to kind of think about this concept of him owing you nothing, that this is out of generosity. This is, you know, this is kind of icing on the cake for the two of you, right? That you're here, that you're competing together. So think of exuberance, lightness, and you can either use those words, fill your brain with those words, or you can be looking around in your life for a song or a statement or, you know, a phrase that sort of inspires that exuberance and that lightness in you.
Okay. All right. That's really helpful because exuberance definitely seems to resonate.
Yeah. So if you know, so kind of the process for finding a mantra is really getting descriptive about what it is you want to create, how you want to feel, what you want your horse to feel and experience. And then brainstorming, you know, making a list of those words. And that's how, when you came up with Just for the Joy of It, remember, it was like that commercial just kind of hit you when you were talking about what you wanted. And so, you know, don't get too sort of goal-oriented about finding just the right mantra. Instead, kind of play with these words and be looking around for, you know, how you can string those words together or for a phrase or a statement that'll work.
Okay. Okay, perfect.
All right, awesome. So then your second question I love, which is you said, can I read what you wrote?
Yes.
You said, I need to broaden my horizons and expand my goals beyond the scope of horses, or not. Just struggling a bit with thinking I should be more proactive member of society or just allow myself to be completely consumed by me time. Absolutely loving it, so thinking I should just allow and enjoy. So your question, it sounds like your coaching question is, should I be, you know, striving for some other goal that sort of feels like more meaningful or has more sort of larger contribution, or should I be really reveling in and enjoying this experience now of having more me time? Because you are now retired after a highly stressful job, correct?
Yes.
So what do you think the answer is to that question?
I think I need to enjoy every minute of what I'm doing right now and kind of let go of everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the nagging thought that you should be doing something else or should be a quote unquote more proactive member of society? What is that feeling from you?
I guess in a word, I could say there's some element of guilt in that I'm not, you know, I'm not striving for anything bigger, you know, right now.
Yeah.
And then I do back up and I think, okay, well, you know, I've paid my dues. I guess that means that I certainly that doesn't mean that I can't continue to contribute, but I think I need to just say, okay, now let go of that for now, and something will show itself.
Yeah.
When
yeah,
it's the
because
right time.
You don't, you know, if you're striving, there's no space for that thing to show up. If there is something else, you know, out there that you may want to do or that you may want to kind of commit to and work toward, it won't show up if you're busy thinking that you should be striving for something.
Okay.
And I love this question because I think no matter where we are in our lives, we all struggle with that a little bit. You know, this idea of, you know, striving versus self-acceptance, really. At what point does self-acceptance become complacency? You know, are you like, I heard that, kind of heard that in your question. Are you just being complacent if you are just enjoying this experience and enjoying your life right now? And to me, that self-acceptance is what is going to lead you to be able to do whatever it is you want to do, you know, and that acceptance
okay.
of your life as it is right now. And it sounds like
all
that's
right.
what's really resonating with you as well.
Yeah, it is. And I guess maybe hearing it, you know, like bouncing it off someone, having it come back is helpful.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
that
so
was
acceptance
easy.
and what I hear from you too is gratitude. So acceptance and gratitude are really what allow you to be present and be effective in your life as well as enjoy it.
Okay.
So awesome.
That's...
Thank you, Anita, for both of those questions.
All right. Thank you, Jen.
All right. Let me see if this is Christine. Christine, is this you?
Yes, it is.
Yay, good, it's working.
Yes.
I love technical difficulties.
I bet you do.
They remind us that we are human. So go ahead and tell me what your coaching question is. What do you want to get out of this conversation?
Well, it's, you know, I work with you for a while, and my goals have been, you know, it's not only writing. I felt like I've reached my writing goals, the ones that was really important to me. I mean, I still have goals, but I've reached those. And, you know, as you're trying to apply the same things to your other areas of life. So this year, for example, I have three goals, and they're like writing, they're personal, and they're, you know, physical. And so you're just working on trying to reach your goal. And I am, you know, totally excited and thrilled to work on this. So when I hear you talking about fear, I don't have the fear of not thinking that I'm going to not be able to cope with whatever happens to me, good or bad.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's as your goal for yourself is so clear, you're still in the world. It's not like you live alone on the island. And
right.
So you encounter pushback maybe, or I believe them as pushbacks. And how do you know when you're pushing too far? I mean, like, kind of a little bit what Anita said about the guilt part. What is, when are you pushing your goals too hard, or not, if you're, sometimes you feel like you're not, you're just like hard rolling it forward, and you know, you better stay out of the way or come with me, or you know, or you're gonna be dust.
yeah so that doesn't feel good, right?
No, it doesn't.
So are you saying, at what point do you, if you're making sacrifices for your goal that don't feel good to you, is that
right?
What, then at,
yeah,
at what
that's,
point do you change course,
right? Or are my goals too vivid or too big or too, like, it just doesn't fit in your life? Or, you know, it's just that balance of finding that you can stick to and keep motivated, be excited about it, which I am with all of them. You know, I really am. But
so could you, Christine, give a concrete example with one of your goals?
Well, one of my goals for this year that I've said to myself is, on my personal level, is independence. And when I say that, it means it's because I've figured out the kind of person I am, that being kind of put into a corner or being stuck there is not a good place for me. I need to feel to be able to relate well with others, and I need to feel kind of fluid, and that I not that I can do whatever I want, but getting cornered is not a good thing for me. And that's sometimes where the feeling of, are you pushing too hard, becomes that you feel like you're put in the corner. And but I want to reach that goal because it's so vivid to me.
So what is the independence? So what is the independence? So what I'm hearing you ask is your goal is independence. And I'm going to, of course, ask you what the result, what is that goal? But that feels like it's really moving the furniture around in your life and causing some upheaval and maybe making people upset along the way.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, in a way, maybe I'm not doing it right. I don't know. But I feel like independence, which could be like financial independence, or I mean, that is one of them. I want to feel like I'm able to do and stay the course or reach that goal, and it might require funds, and I want to know that I can do that independently of somebody else.
What do you want to leave with? Let's look at that financial goal. What do you want to leave with?
Well, because one of my goals were to become independent in a way that I started my own business but that was for a reason that I was get more time over, you know,
yeah.
So I can work from home and things like that. Now I'm kind of shifting like, well, independence. Well, now I need to maybe for financial independence, I need to work more. And that goes against my original. And I think part of the conflict is like, okay, which one is it, Christine?
Okay, so you want to have clarity about what?
Well, that is the question, I think, for me a little bit, because I know what I want. I'm not sure I'm willing to pay the price.
Okay, that's the question. That's your question. Am I willing to pay the price for this goal?
Yes.
So what is the financial goal? Like, to kind of just, you don't have to give like exact numbers or anything, but describe like, what is that goal? What does it represent? What are you going to be able to do?
It just represents the feeling of whatever happens. I'll, you know, kind of like I was saying, I want to know that I'd be okay.
Okay. So let's say that's a certain amount of money that you need to feel like you're okay.
Right.
And what are the sacrifices that you're now finding you think you need to make in order to have that goal happen?
I think that's where the clarity comes in. Well, because I logically understand that it means that if it isn't just financial, but it's if I'm going to do that, I will have to work more or do or find, you know, come up with another way or, you know, and I mean, I think that's where my work, what I need to work in, you know,
okay,
for myself.
Okay, so your belief is that in order to make more money, in order to make the money and reach your financial goal and that independence, you have to work more.
I think so. That's all.
And
I
then
come
that
up
will
with
mean
anyway.
Sacrificing time. That's sacrificing time, right? And the time.
Yes. Which was
of your own
totally.
You could have more time. Okay.
Yeah. So it was totally
that
opposite.
Is not true? What if that premise is not true, that you have to work more? What are some other options that might be that could be true?
I'm not sure, because that's where you go first, and I think that's where my work lays. Is like, if I'm not willing or willing, it's not that I'm not willing, but I don't really want it to be just a financial thing. It's not. But it's really hard to explain. That's why the clarity isn't there.
Yeah. So would you be willing to consider that that's not necessarily true, that you have to work more in order to make more money?
I would like to believe that.
Okay.
I would like to believe that, yes.
What are some other options that could be possible if you were to really open up your mind? What could be possible?
At this point, I don't know. I guess ride less. but that's not good.
Okay, ride less because riding costs money, so you could budget. Is that what you're saying? You
yes,
budget,
I could budget. Spend
less.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And what else?
Yes. I don't know, honestly.
The underlying premise is, so you have your own business now, and you're thinking that you need to give up time, and you might need to for a short period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would encourage you to brainstorm about all the things that you could do to, in your life, generate that financial freedom or that independence that was not necessarily. You could raise your rates. You could focus on different clients. You could do a different kind of work. Like, all these things might seem impossible to you, but you know as well as anyone that often what seems impossible in the beginning ends up not being impossible in the end. Right?
Yep.
I would like you to brainstorm about all the things that are possible that maybe seem impossible to you right now.
Okay.
So that you can, because here's where we get stuck. This one premise, you know, that you have to give up time and work harder and more in order to gain financial freedom. That one idea is keeping you stuck.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? That sacrifice is in your mind. So
totally.
I'm asking you to open your mind to all the possibilities and write those down.
Mm-hmm.
And then begin to consider what those might look like. And and this is, you know, this could be the same in relationships. You know, if you want independence and you start creating some boundaries or having some difficult conversations, and the other people in your life start being unhappy or upset, you want to keep asking yourself, okay, what is, you know, what else is possible here? What am I missing that might be possible that I could do? How could I do this differently? So this isn't about giving up on your goal, but it's about getting more creative, more expansive about strategy. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So sometimes
totally.
The clarity comes out of first, like, just throwing all the spaghetti at the wall. What are all the things that are possible?
Right.
And then that'll start to open things up. So, you know, in that's my homework assignment for you.
Okay.
And to really notice, like, how you feel when you consider all of the different options that start to come up.
Yep. Makes total sense.
So you kind of said a minute ago when I started listing those things, you kind of said, oh, yeah. So what are you leaving with? What is the idea that you're leaving with that may help lead you to clarity, if there is one?
The things I'm leaving with is the fact that I realize that I am stuck in a one path thing rather than open it up for different opportunities and look at the whole picture. I've been, you know, go from a tunnel vision to just spread it and on top of that, not be discouraged by it, but see the kind of excitement of finding the way again.
I love that. So make it expansive and creative and think of it as an exciting challenge to figure out what that might be, even among options that seem impossible. One of the things you said in your question was, what is the, you know, when you get really clear on your goals and you get really clear on your vision, how do you create the balance then when you look at where you really are and where that vision is and it seems so far away? And sometimes when we get really clear on our vision and our goals, it's exciting, but it actually makes the gap between where you are and where your vision is more obvious.
Yeah.
You know, that gap.
That's true.
Yep. And then sometimes that gap, like what may have been kind of happening with you, is that gap becomes kind of overwhelming and intimidating, and you get stuck sort of in one way of thinking. So, yeah. So this is your opportunity to kind of look at that gap and think, okay, you know, what are all the different ways I could jump in here into this gap?
Right.
Instead of thinking there's only one bridge across.
Yep. No, that makes total sense. I like that. That's encouraging.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks.
And keep us
Thank you.
On how this sort of unfolds.
Okay. I will. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Christine.
Thanks.
All right. So, Pam, go ahead and raise your hand. All right. Do I have you?
You do.
Wonderful. Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. I love this question, and I think a lot of us are going to identify with it. Do you want me to read what you wrote, or do you want to kind of lay it out for us, what you want out of this conversation?
Well, no, I can kind of lay it out. So, so when I ride, and you know, I have a few different horses that I ride, and I always do groundwork, a little bit of groundwork first, just to kind of make sure they're between the aids on the ground before I ever get on them. And when I'm doing it, and everything's going fine, but I start to think about, okay, so once I'm on, what happens if X, Y, or Z happens? If they bolt, if they buck, if they spook, if they do just, you know, if they're a horse and just do something that's unexpected, you know, what's going to happen? Am I going to be able to handle it? Am I going to come off? Am I going to get hurt? Am I going to get, you know, so there's just like this level of, and it's a little, I mean, I would call it anxiety in the sense of it's kind of feels a little bit like that, but it's really just this whole series of what ifs that kind of go through my head that, you know, that I just think about. And then, you know, it doesn't stop me from getting on the horse. And then once I'm on the horse and I'm in the saddle, I kind of have this attitude of like, okay, I'm here now, so all that's got to go away and we just got to go. And I do.
Yeah.
And, you know, the anxiety goes away and everything goes away. And, you know, most, I would say, you know, probably, I don't know, 90% of the time we have a great ride and everything's great. But there still are, because of just the horses that I ride, there are still times when, you know, one will spook or one will bolt or, you know, I get, you know, I have one mare that if I accidentally ask for a canter too loudly, she gets mad at me for yelling at her. She bucks, kind of thing.
So what is this? Why does this matter to you? What is it stealing from you? Because also you're experiencing, we could say, kind of anxiety related to the what ifs that your brain conjures up as you're preparing to ride, as you're getting ready to ride. And then it goes away once you're in the saddle and you're kind of physically engaged in riding, right?
Yeah. And, you know, and in the past couple of years, I've sat through a number of these things just, you know, like not even like a week or so ago, I was on a completely strange horse. I've never ridden before and in a completely strange saddle. It was an all-purpose saddle, which I only ride dressage. So I was like, oh, this feels funny. And he tripped and pretty much face planted himself. And I stayed in the saddle and we got fine. He got back up and we were good. And I was like, okay, that went okay and everything. So there's this part of me that knows that I can do this. But for some reason, you know, every time when I'm, or, you know, most times I should say when I'm doing this groundwork with my horses, there's this whole thing that comes in that feels to me like it's a lack of confidence. And I can't quite figure out how to kind of why this is, you know, how to kind of mesh the two or overcome the one, because when I'm in the saddle.
So why does it matter? Why does it matter to you? Why not just let yourself feel anxious before you ride?
I think it's just because it frustrates me more than anything else.
Yeah.
Because to me, like I said, it feels like a lack of confidence, and I don't like that feeling. And so
you want to shift, you want to change that dynamic so that you'll feel confident from start to finish through your whole session, your groundwork and your riding work.
Right. And then when I'm on there doing my groundwork, you know, this doesn't kind of interrupt, for a better term, the enjoyment I have of actually just doing the groundwork. And it you know, it kind of creeps in, and then it's like, okay, make that go away, focus back in on the groundwork, and then it creeps in again. I'm like, oh, this is just so frustrating, because it's like,
okay,
I just want it to go away.
So your prefrontal cortex, the main part of your brain, knows there's nothing to be afraid of. Like, you have proven yourself over and over. You know that you can handle all these different situations. But that lizard part of your brain I was talking about earlier, it's the one saying, oh, but what if? Is that right?
Yeah, and I don't know if that's a holdover from, you know, years ago when I did come off and get severely hurt, but you would think that it wouldn't go away once I sat down in the saddle. And that's,
so
I think, where I'm confused.
Clear. It sounds like, Pam, you're pretty clear that it is your what-if thoughts that are causing the anxiety and the low confidence.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you are going to shift from your lizard brain thoughts to your prefrontal cortex thoughts, like what I sometimes call your inner coach thoughts, what are the constructive thoughts that you would like to keep your brain occupied with during this period of time, from when you go out to the barn, while you're tacking up, while you're doing your in-hand work? What kind of thoughts do you want to have that would inspire you to be in a confident, calm emotion?
I think what I want to do is I want to be able to say, to really say, okay, so this is my plan for this ride, so I have a plan for the ride. This is the plan for the ride. This is my goals for this particular, for this particular day on this particular horse. And, and when I'm doing the groundwork and the in-hand work, making sure that the work I'm doing there is fitting into that plan and those goals, so that that's the focus, and this other stuff doesn't kind of just keep interrupting it.
Okay. So then let's use an example. So you go to work with one horse tomorrow, and you're going to have a plan to shift yourself from the anxiety to what you describe, what emotional state you want to be in while you're doing the in-hand work.
Just calm and focused and excited about the fact that I'm going to ride, and we've got a good plan in place, and we're, and the fact that I just get to enjoy the time with them.
Okay, good. And so you have a plan, and what are the things that, because we know you're going to have a plan, right? You're going to have a plan of what you're going to do. And then what are the things that you want to remind yourself of when you feel your brain going to those what ifs? Which you do not have to think. Those are fully your brain being unattended, going off on its own random tangent. You can regroup, refocus your thoughts. What are you going to think instead?
I'm going to think, there's a part of me that says I'm going to think about that, I will confidently sit to everything that happens. But to me, that feels like it's acknowledging that something else could happen. And I don't even want to.
Wait, what did you say? You confidently what?
I can confidently handle whatever happens.
Okay.
I can confidently sit
moment,
and ride through whatever
okay, so
happens.
That's too general. Your brain is not going to latch onto that. So in the moment, when you're with your horse, what are the things you want to be paying attention to? What do you want to be directing? What do you want to be creating?
I want to be directing and creating, that is my horse listening to me and am I listening to my horse? So as I'm doing the in-hand work and I'm trying, I'm making sure that my horse is between the aids on the ground, I'm focused and I'm saying, okay, so we're going to do, I'm going to do this, and this is what I expect the reaction from the horse to be. And if it's not, then I need to take a look at what I'm doing and figure out, am I being clear? Am I being unclear with my direction to the horse, with my aids? Are my aids being clear
great.
So that my horse knows what to do?
Okay, so if your brain is preoccupied with, this is what I'm asking you, how are you going to answer? Oh, no, that's not quite what I wanted. This is the answer I wanted. So you're keeping your brain so focused on the present moment and asking your horse questions. Can you picture, so can you picture taking your brain from the what ifs to being more present in the moment and being very specific about what you're asking for and the responses you want from your horse, almost having a conversation with your horse in your mind,
yeah,
instead of letting it go to the what ifs?
Yeah, I think, you know what, as you were just talking through that, what occurred to me is that when I go out to ride, I generally have a plan for what I'm going to accomplish in the saddle, but I don't necessarily have as crystal clear of a plan of what I'm going to do on the ground first. It's become a little bit of a routine. What I do on the ground has become a little bit, we kind of do the same thing most times. And so I think because of that, it's a little bit of a, it's become habit enough where it's like, I'm not thinking about it as much because I don't have to.
Yeah.
And I think that opens up room for other things.
That's such a great insight. So because your routine has become so automatic for you, it leaves lots of room for what if.
Yes. And so I need to create a plan. I need to, for every ride kind of thing, I need to create two plans. I need to create my, what are we going to do on the ground plan? And how does that tie into what I want to do under the saddle? And then focus in on both of them as their own unique kind of opportunity. Because I think if I do that on the ground too, then there may be things I notice in terms of how we're interacting on the ground that may actually change what I want to do in the saddle.
So one of the, I might invite you to take a little time before your rides tomorrow, before you're in hand work, and write down the questions you're going to ask of the horse in hand and the answers that you plan to get.
Okay.
Get that micro about it, because the more macro you are, the more you leave room, you know, the more you just think, oh, I'm going to be confident with whatever happens. That's too big for your brain. But, these are the questions I'm going to ask. These are the answers I want. And you're going to retrain your brain to latch onto those things. And that might change. You know, this will change and evolve over time. But I think your insight about leaving too much room, in your plan, having your plan be too open is really good.
Yep. Yeah,
will you let us know how
sense.
That goes?
Absolutely.
And ideally then, once, and you might have to practice it. This is what I want to, really remind all you guys is when you're practicing kind of this is a fear to power cycle, that you're going from fear to power in this scenario. And it sometimes takes a little practice. It might not happen right away. You might have to experiment. But ultimately your goal is then going to be in that state of calm and focus instead of it living in the what ifs. Awesome.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you get what you wanted to out of that conversation?
I did.
All right. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
You too.
Okay, Lorraine, one more. Okay, we're doing okay. Lorraine, go ahead and raise your hand. Are you here, Lorraine? I'm going to go ahead while you're... Oh, there you are. All right. Lorraine, is that you?
Yep, it's me.
Great. So go ahead and kind of outline your coaching question for us.
So often I get to the barn after a difficult day at work, and if I can't, I want a ways to leave... the rest of my life, whether that's work or whatever else, at the barn door, because I find if I get on my horse when I've had a difficult day, mostly like mentally, I mean, obviously if I'm physically not, I'm too tired, that's different. But I mean mentally, I'm frazzled because something bad happened and I haven't really got past it because it was at the end of the day. If I get on my horse, it generally goes very poorly. I get frustrated with her, myself, the world in general.
Yeah.
And it's not a positive experience for anybody. But I do groundwork, like I lunge or I do groundwork, for some reason I have no problem focusing on what we're doing in a positive way. we get things done, and then at the end of it, I feel better. I don't know if the horse does, but I'm sure she doesn't feel worse. So I'd like to be able to do whatever it is I do when I lunge and do groundwork when I've had a bad day that would allow me to ride as instead of just having to do like groundwork on those days.
So on those days, what would you say when you go straight from work or straight from a bad day or a bad situation to riding? How would you describe what you're feeling or your emotional state that you're in?
I would say the first word that popped into my head when you asked that was frazzled.
Yeah, frazzled. All right, and then when you bring that frazzledness, that kind of becomes the lens through which you ride through. Everything your horse does, you kind of react from that frazzled place.
Yeah, because when I'm frazzled, I have less patience, and so everything I do or the horse do, I have less patience for whatever that is.
Right, right. So that, and then that's, of course, when our horses become our mirrors, right? And that creates kind of that frazzled experience for the horse, and the horse becomes more frazzled sometimes or shuts down, one of the two.
Totally.
So what emotional state would you like to be in when you get on the horse?
Calm and focused on the ride rather than the rest of the day.
Okay, so a little bit like what Pam talked about.
Yeah.
So you want to get on, and so what is your routine when you're, do you have a drive? Do you drive to the barn? Do you?
Yes, the very long one.
Okay, so it's a long drive.
Yes.
So if you've had a bad experience or a bad day, what do you generally do on that drive to the barn?
Well, based on yesterday's experience, I randomly alternate between thrashing over in my mind whatever the hell the problem was at work, and then trying to focus on I'm going to have a nice ride, I'm going to ride, it's going to be great, and it'll make me feel better. But that stupid person, oh my God, what the hell? And it, the confidence doesn't really win in my experience.
Okay, good. So you've already tried, you know, kind of talking to yourself on the drive. One of the
yes.
things that you've said is kind of a clue, and I think this is true for all of us. You know, when you're doing in-hand work or you're lunging, you're moving around, you're breathing, and that helps shift you from that negative emotional state or like a lower level emotional state to a more calm one. Does that make sense?
Okay.
That movement. So I'm wondering, is that typical of you, that kind of movement helps you shift out of a frazzled state?
I don't know, but it sounds kind of like it feels right when you say it. So I'm thinking maybe yes, because like when I lunge or do groundwork, I don't just stand in the middle. I walk with her, and like we lunge around a, you know, giant, enormous outdoor jump ring. So
yeah,
it is much more movement oriented, like my own movement. I'm walking around. I'm not running or anything, but I'm walking around.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm wondering, you know, this is kind of the job, we all have this job, right, is identifying what are the things for us that help us shift, you know, from a negative emotional state to a positive one for our horses. Like, this is our responsibility, right, to know this about ourselves. So I'm wondering, you know, if you experiment, if that is, let's say that is the case, that breathing and moving really helps you kind of be able to get out of that frazzled state and be more calm. You have that long drive, and then what is there a ritual or a routine that you could establish that you do between that drive and your ride that could potentially help you make that shift?
I could do like a short groundwork or like a short lunge with the intention then of riding. Cause usually like I don't lunge before I ride. I either do a lunging session where I expect to achieve something in the lunge or I ride.
Mm.
So
yeah.
You know, like
so
I
you could use the lunging
ride.
As your own training, you know, activity, your own
yeah.
training strategy to get you back into that emotional state that you want to be in when you're riding.
Right. It wouldn't be so much about the horse.
Yeah. Yeah. And then so you said, and I'm just going to throw some ideas out here for you, because that's what you said, you wanted are some strategies, right? So one strategy for you is to lunge. yes. for yourself. And then one, do you ever listen to music in the car?
Yes, I actually love listening to music in the car.
Do you have music that intentionally sort of helps you get into a, let go of the day and get into a, into feeling better, into a better mood?
No, actually, I really don't. I've never, oddly enough, never really used music for that purpose or thought about using it for that purpose. In fact,
music is a really powerful, music is one of the most powerful ways to shift your emotional state.
Yeah, and that's one thing, because when I'm frazzled, I tend to deliberately not put music on. Like, it's
right,
it's a because weird...
you don't feel like it, right? You feel
yeah.
like it's stewing, going over and over in your
yes.
head, the irritating person or the irritating situation.
Totally. Totally that.
So
yes.
would that be something you'd be willing to try, is actually choosing, making yourself a playlist or choosing some music that with the intention of shifting you into that more calm, focused state?
Yeah,
or happy, inspired, whatever.
Yes, I have no idea what kind of music, but I will look through my very extensive collection for such things.
Yeah, play with it. Play, you know, kind of experiment with what works, and use, you know, think of how constructively can you use that drive to the barn.
Right.
And if it doesn't work to just, you know, change your thoughts, then you want to really look at all the other options for changing your mood. Then the other thing is breathing. You know, quite often when we're stewing over something and it creates anxiety, then we start to hold our breath. And that can perpetuate that frazzled experience for you, from the negative experience onto the horse, because you've been breathing shallowly or holding your breath. So that would be one strategy I invite you to kind of look at too, is how are you breathing in the car? How are you breathing when you get out of the car and you're tacking up and you're grooming? What are the conversations you're having with your mare in your mind while you're getting ready to ride? You know, how could you create a little bit more movement just in your body in the car through breathing, rather than letting yourself get tightly wound?
Yeah, I like that idea.
And we all have our own rituals. You know, this is a question that comes up, you know, I find I have with people a lot, is what is the ritual, the routine, you know, that you have? For some people, it's listening to inspiring podcasts. For some people, it's getting out of the car and doing sun salutes or taking 10 minutes to stretch. For some people, it's really spending the time grooming and being connected with the horse and you know, doing that slow, calm, in-hand work. All with the intention of shifting you from one emotional state to another.
Yeah, and even just when you said the grooming thing, just I tend to, I mean, she's blanketed at this time of year, so I tend to, you know, take the blanket off, 2 seconds of grooming, and, you know, kind of off we go. I could put a lot more energy and time into that, which would also make me move more, you know, if I was thoroughly grooming her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you could be, you know, more intentional. So go ahead and make a list of all of these things, you know, intentional grooming, breathing, music, lunging, you know, whatever you want to try, and then experiment with what works the best for you and find a routine that really helps you get to where you need to be for her when you get in the saddle.
Yeah, I really like the idea of the movement and music as well, but the movement, I think, is probably, it dissipates some of that energy as well, the frustrated energy that I need to get rid of.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the clue for that was that this is what works for me. The lunging works. This is what doesn't work. So you can, you know, for everybody listening, you can kind of look for those clues. You know, when do you feel the best? When, you know, when are you able to really get yourself, you know, into a great mood from a bad mood? What are the things that happen? And then how do you become more intentional around making those things happen when you want, you know, when you want to change moods? Instead of just thinking that your moods come and go randomly, how can you really impact them?
Thank you.
All right,
really
so what
helpful.
Are you leaving with? What's your takeaway, Lorraine?
My takeaway is that on those days when I want to ride, like mentally, but mentally I don't feel like I'm there because of life, that I have a list now. So moving and breathing, which can be like a short lunge, groundwork, even in hand work, or more thorough grooming. And also making sure that my breathing's good. I don't think I tend to shallow breathe, but now I'm going to go actually look for that. And also deliberately choosing music that would help me shift to a calmer state of mind, less frazzled, even though I am deliberately doing that, even though I don't actually want to listen to music at that time.
I know that feeling exactly. All right, so, will you keep us posted in the Facebook group and let us know how these strategies work for you?
Absolutely. This is really helpful.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a great evening.
Thank you. You too.
All right, you guys. So I'm going to finish this call with a quote that I love that sort of speaks to this whole process that we've been going through, you know, with the goal setting and having a strategic plan. And then also getting to a level of kind of gratitude and self-acceptance that really allows you to enjoy the whole process of going through the gap being kind of that space between where you are now and where you ultimately want to be. So this is W.H. Murray, who's a Scottish Himalayan expedition leader. Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans. That the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. The moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issues from one decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents and meetings and material assistance, which no man could have dreamt would have come his way. Whatever you can do or dream you can do, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. So keep it up, you guys, and I will be with you 1 month from today. We will be back here, I believe, March 12th for our next coaching call. All right. Have a good evening.